Welcome to session 5 of the Info Product Creation Training Program. So let's do a quick recap of the last session just so we have some continuity here. In session 4, we talked about the factors that you need in order for someone to buy. And this really applies to any business, but particularly in a situation where you're selling a digital product to someone who doesn't know you. So there needs to be pain, there needs to be really a desire for gain, and sometimes those are interchangeable. It really depends what you're selling. There needs to be the right timing needs to be in place, and trust needs to be in place as well. So when you have the intersection of all of those 4 factors, you have the conditions for a potential sale. Now, we also talked about the fact that at any given moment, only 3% of your market is actively looking for a solution that you provide. So that's a very small number, and you can't build a business after just looking for the 3%. The next group is really where the magic happens. There's a group that's 40% big, and they are poised to begin a search. Now, a chunk of those could easily move into the 3% category. So it's not like, you know, they're all the same. There's kind of a part of that group that's very close to the 3% and can easily move there and can move there very, very quickly. But your job is really to find the 40%. While you're looking for the 40%, the 3% are going to emerge anyway. And then you build enough trust with them over time that they'll eventually buy your product or your products. Then there's the 57%, and really many of those will just never buy. So your job is not to try to convince those. There are other industries and businesses where their success really depends on converting those 57%. This is not one of them. I would not worry about those. Some of those will naturally move into the 40% category, and then you'll attract them then. We talked about 2 different chasms that you have to cross, the opt-in chasm and the $1 chasm. The opt-in chasm meaning getting someone to trust you enough to give you their email address, and then getting someone to trust you enough to spend a dollar with you. And we talked about the difference between, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a dollar, if it's $10 or $100. I mean, obviously, you know, the more you're asking for, the higher the perceived risk by the prospect. But the difference between spending zero and a dollar is massive. So your job is to try to convert as many prospects into opt-ins, into leads, in other words, and as many leads as possible into customers. And we talked about some of the math behind that and why over the long term, that's really a smart strategy. And then I give you an assignment to start kind of going through your product content and identify at least 3 potential lead magnet ideas. So I want you thinking along those lines, because that's going to be a key component of your marketing strategy. In this session, we're going to talk about how to launch your first product. Now, this is very important. You need to finish your product before you do any of this stuff. It's very tempting to just kind of say, you know, I'm kind of stuck there. Let me go ahead and start working on this stuff now. You know, there might be some benefits to doing some of these pieces, but I think you're better off just doing one thing at a time. So finish your product before you start working on the steps that I'm going to detail here. I'm going to just give you a little bit of a heads up here. There's another option that I'm going to teach you in session 6. And it's a concept I learned from Jeff Walker, the creator of Product Launch Formula. And it's called the seed launch. Now, to me, this is certainly a way that you could approach your product creation process. But in the way, knowing what I know now, the way I'm teaching you this process, I think really is the best way to do it. Now, I'm still going to teach you the seed launch, and I'll give you a heads up on what it is now, because I think it could be a viable last resort. And it basically involves pre-selling your product and then creating your product as you go through live conference calls or teleclasses. So keeping it really low tech, low key, very, it's a very scrappy approach. but you're creating as you go, and you avoid having to do all the stuff up front and then, you know, launch your product. I think there's some advantages to doing it this way. I frankly feel there are more disadvantages than advantages, but I'm going to teach it to you in session six. For those of you who may have gotten to that point and just are still nowhere near completing your product, it might be something to consider. So I just want to give you a heads up about that now. But again, I really do believe that doing it the way I'm teaching you here is the best way. I'm trying to balance, you know, kind of doing it right and then tempering that with, you know, the costs and the risks involved in doing it this way. I think the end result, what you'll get from this, what you'll have is just far outweighs the benefits of other approaches that are more just kind of build as you go, because your number one job right now is really to build that asset. And that's really what it is. Once you get that info product created, you have an asset. Until you've created it, you have nothing. So I think it's better to work with an asset that's already created than it is to just kind of do everything at once and then risk never creating that asset. So again, I'll go through that in session six. So let's go through the step-by-step launch process. And there are really 10 steps. So let's go through them one by one. I'm not going to give you the whole list now, but this is all in your handout. Let's just go through them one step at a time. Step one is all about writing your sales page and your email campaign. So in fact, this is a good place to let you know, I am releasing several bonus trainings in the bonuses area of this program. They're all going to be there. And I'm going to be referring to several of those trainings here in this session. I think it's better for me to kind of decouple that material and just teach it separately. Otherwise, it would bloat this particular session way too much. So I have a bonus training session on copy, which includes writing copy for your sales pages, your squeeze pages, and your email campaigns. And I'm going to go through a couple of different options there as far as promotional email campaigns on what I would do if I were starting out and putting out my first product out there. It's important to start here in this step, writing your sales page first. It might seem a little bit counterintuitive. You know, don't we want to go ahead and deploy the technology and all that? Yes, we're going to get to that. But I think it's important to start with your sales page, because until you can figure out how to sell your product, your idea, nothing else matters. I don't want this to be an afterthought for you. I know it has for me many times. And frankly, it's really held me back, because I wish I would have started with a sales page a little bit earlier. So take the time to draft a powerful sales page first. In fact, I'll tell you, there are some people out there who go as far as suggesting that you should never even start creating a product or anything along those lines until you've written your sales page first. Joe Polish, he's a famous marketing consultant and direct response copywriter and email marketer. Goes as far as suggesting that you really should start anything, any product idea, any business idea with a sales page or a sales letter. And that's a powerful concept. I've tried this several times with different products I've created. It actually works really, really well, because it forces you to pre-create the product in its best form. And it's like starting at the end and backing into that, you know, that Stephen Covey's begin with the end in mind concept. So I'm not going to go as far as to tell you that, you know, before you do anything, create your sales letter, your sales page. Obviously, we're beyond that. I've had you do other things first. But when it comes to your launch, the first step really should be to go ahead and draft your sales page. And then once you have your sales page, at least a decent draft created, you want to write your promotional emails that will drive people on your list to the sales page. And again, I'm going to go over a very simple promo email campaign in the bonus training on copy. So that's all there. Step two is to then decide on your technology, the technology you're going to use to run your business. Here again, I have a separate training session that I've done with Crystal Coleman from my team on technology. We've put a lot of time and thought into this. This is something that's constantly changing. Here's the good news. There's never been a better time to deploy this technology, to start an info products business from a technology standpoint, because there are more options than ever before, many more than when I started, and some of them are turnkey. So they include pretty much everything you need all in one package. That's a new concept that definitely wasn't around when I got started in 2008. And I'm going to strongly urge you to consider either a turnkey solution or a very simple combination of bundles, maybe two or three pieces that when you cobble them together will give you the same result. It will save you money, number one, and it will be less of a headache. Now, if you piece any of this together, whether it's combining some of the bundles or if you decide to just buy the individual pieces and put them together, I strongly recommend hiring a virtual assistant to help you with that. So I'm going to give you a couple of resources where you can find affordable virtual assistants or VAs also in the tech session. Crystal and I will talk about that, and we'll also explain what to look for. When I got started, that's exactly what I did. I went ahead. I wasn't going into it planning to hire a VA, but as I bought the different pieces, and I realized, oh my gosh, I have no time or desire to do this on my own. So I went out and hired a VA just to help me kind of tie together my shopping cart with my payment processing and my pages and delivery and all that good stuff. And she did a great job of that. And she even hung around a little bit to just kind of help me make sure that everything was working well, troubleshoot any problems that come up. So it's just good to have someone you could turn to for that kind of thing. Step number three, you want to deploy your technology. So once you decide on your technology, you want to go ahead and just turn it on. You want to give yourself some time here because it always takes a little longer than you'd expect. So even if you're going with something turnkey, it's going to take you a little bit of time to kind of go through the tutorials, set things up, start getting your whole account where you need it to be. Decide on templates and so forth, and we're going to get into some of that. But you don't want to rush through this. No matter which way you go with, which direction you go in, this is something that you're going to need a few days to kind of go through and sort out and just kind of get a little comfortable with. Step number four is about creating all your pages and then uploading your copy to those pages. So what am I talking about here? What pages? Well, again, you want to see my bonus training on sales copy, and I'm going to talk about these pages. So sales pages and thank you pages and other pages. But let me just kind of give you a rundown of the basic pages you're going to need. We've already talked about one of them, which is this sales page. You're also going to need an order form. Now, depending on what technology you deploy, many of them come with pre-built order forms, like oneshoppingcart.com, which is what I started out with, has the order forms already built in. You can customize a little bit, but the order forms are there. But there are some technologies you could buy that just do order forms. You're going to need a thank you page. So if you think about the process here, right, you get somebody to a sales page, then they click on buy now. That takes them to an order form. They put in their information, and once their credit card is accepted or they submit payment, then they're taken to a thank you page. Some people call it a thank you page. Some people call it the download page or the product page. But it's usually a thank you page saying, great, thank you, thanks for your purchase. Be on the lookout for an email with login instructions, etc. Then you have delivery emails that actually deliver the login, the product, et cetera. Going back to pages, you're going to need a waiting list page potentially. A waiting list page is once you have closed what's called closed cart. So you have closed your enrollment process for your product. And we're going to talk more about evergreen versus having an actual enrollment window. But once you have closed the enrollment window, you don't want people who come in later who missed out, they were on vacation, they weren't paying attention or whatever, they're interested in the product, they want to buy, and suddenly they click on their email, and instead of taking them to the sales page, it takes them to 404, this page doesn't exist. You don't want that. So you want a page that says, you know, sorry, enrollment for this program or this product is closed. However, if you want to be the first to be notified next time I open enrollment or next time I make it available, go ahead and enter your information here. That's very, very important. I didn't do that for years, and I just wonder how many opportunities that I miss out on. So if you're going to have an enrollment period, you definitely want a waiting list page so you know who your hot prospects are. You're also going to want a terms and conditions page. This is boring stuff, but you know I really can't give you much advice here because you need an attorney to help you guide you through this process. But you want a page that essentially lists your terms and conditions. It's important stuff. You want to protect yourself, and in the event that somebody you know comes after you making some sort of weird claim that you promised this, that, or whatever. So it's always a good idea to have a terms and conditions page. You're going to want links to it on your website. You're going to want links to it on your sales page. Another page you're going to want to create is a lead magnet squeeze page. So this is going to be a squeeze page. It's just a landing page that's designed to squeeze an email out of somebody, which is kind of graphic. But it's a page that just basically sells, if you will, the lead magnet. These pages, typically the move has been towards less and less copy on these pages. Typically there's a picture of the lead magnet there. The title of the lead magnet's either in a headline or just a headline that describes the promise, what you're going to get out of it. And again, that's typically just the title of the lead magnet. Maybe two or three bullet points that indicate what you'll get out of it. Although that's not necessary. I've seen many, and I use many pages that don't have the bullet points, but I guess it's 50-50. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And then a field for at least an email address. I like to ask for first name and email address. That way I can personalize my promotional emails a little better. But that's a squeeze page. You're also going to want a lead magnet download page. So think about the process. If I go ahead and submit my information, and because I want the lead magnet, once I click submit, it needs to take me to a page where I can either thank the person saying, great, thank you, be on the lookout for an email with a link to that download. Or my preference is to do both, to say, thank you, here's that download, here is that that PDF or what have you. And there's a download link below it. And then I'm also generating an autoresponder email from my system with a link to it. And usually I say something to the effect of, thanks again for downloading my my PDF. Just in case you exited out of the page or you haven't downloaded it yet, here's a direct link to that page. I like to do both because if you don't provide the email and somebody accidentally exits out of that tab, they may lose it. So I want them to have a record of a link to that page, to that download page for the lead magnet. And then finally, you want to write copy for the opt-in box on your blog or website. So whoever you pick that's going to be managing your emails and your subscriptions will give you the code that you can drop into your website. But you need to write the copy that sells that sells that lead magnet. You can see an example of that in my website, b2blauncher.com. I have a sidebar with it's got the opt-in box there. It's got the where people can enter their name and email, but then you'll see the copy that I have. And this is just commonplace. You could see this everywhere, but you need to write that copy. Now, again, all this becomes a ton easier if you use a turnkey solution for your technology. You want to avoid complexity and overwhelm as much as possible because they will kill your motivation and cause you to quit. This is the technology piece I find is the area where most people just bail. This is where they get overwhelmed. This is where they say, forget it. This is where they get very, very frustrated. So just be mindful of that and just be easy on yourself do yourself a favor, go with the simplest possible solution, whether it's one or whether it's two or three. And if you use more than to, let's say, strongly consider getting a little bit of help. Most of the time it's going to be temporary help just to help you piece it together. All right, moving on to step number five, which is uploading your product. So the steps here, I can't give you a lot of detail because it depends on what technology you end up deploying. But at this point, what you want is you want a finished product and you want to go ahead and upload that product into your system so that your system can deliver it to customers. Okay, so sounds pretty straightforward. It depends on what you're using. It usually is fairly straightforward. Step number six, adding people to your emailing list. So here's what you want. At this point, now that you've kind of taken care of, you know, a lot of the technology, you have your email distribution in place, you want to start adding people to your list. Now, it depends on how you feel about this. There's two schools of thought. One that says, look, they're friends, colleagues, family, I'm just going to go ahead and add them, especially if they already know what I'm doing. If I've been talking to them about it, then I'm just going to go ahead and add them to my mailing list. I still like to ask people. I'm maybe a little bit old-fashioned there, but just a simple email. Hey, Bill, remember when we talked about, you know, I was doing this info product on, you know, whatever. I'm creating a mailing list with information on that topic. I'll also talk about my product occasionally there. Would you mind if I add you to my mailing list? Something even shorter than what I just described, but something really quick, conversational, low key. And, you know, what you do get is when you do it this way, out of every 10, you might get 8 people responding. 7 or 8 people. So you're going to lose some, but I don't know. I think it's better, and you'll have to make that decision on your own, to just ask people. But what I'm suggesting here for most of you is going to be to kind of try a grassroots approach for this initial launch. Most of the people you're going to promote this to are people you already know, people who already know you. So hence, why you're adding friends, colleagues, family. Survey respondents is another great category. So people who went ahead and told you, yes, go ahead and notify me. Remember at the end of the survey, I suggested that you add a couple of fields for contact information for those who wanted to learn more. People you talk to in your validation calls or validation emails, definitely want to reach out to them unless they've already given you the go-ahead to please keep them posted. And then you want to test your opt-in process on your website, just to make sure that that is working well. So this step is all about, again, just kind of start building your email list and make sure that that process of opting in is working. Because one thing you may want to let some of your people know is, by the way, so I have a subscription form for this on my website. Here's a link. If you know of other people who might be interested in learning more about this, or learning more on this topic, you know, feel free to point them there. Step seven kind of continues this. So you've added kind of that initial list of people to your mailing list. Now you want to deploy 2 or 3 list building strategies to get to at least 50 subscribers before launching. So if from this process you already have 40 or 50 people on your mailing list, that's great. But if you can get to 100 or more, that's even better. If you can get to 100 or more before you actually launch your product. I have a bonus training here again on list building in the bonuses area. So go through that. I'll give you some ideas on what you can do. It's actually not as hard as you think to get your first 100, 200, 300 subscribers or so. Once you get beyond that, it really relies more on other methods that are beyond your network. But I think just leveraging your network and social media, you could do some serious damage very, very quickly. So you want to try to get to at least, again, 50 subscribers before you launch. If you can get to 100 or better, man, that would be fantastic. So deploy those, and you may have to spend, you know, a few weeks doing that before you actually launch. Step eight is to test all your technology. Now, you could be doing this while you are deploying step seven. Okay, so keep in mind, this is not necessarily a serial process. Some of this can be done in parallel. So step eight, you want to test all your technology. One of the things we do here is we price a product. And when we load a new product into the system, we'll price it initially at a dollar because it hasn't been announced yet, so it doesn't matter. We price it at a dollar, and then we test buying it just to make sure that everything is working properly, that the order form's working, that the delivery emails are working, the shopping cart, everything. So you want to test the entire process. Depending on what technology you're deploying, they will have some tutorials on how to do this. So you just follow what they suggest. And you know that actually is a good point for me to just stress that there's only so much support I can give you with this because it depends on what technology you're deploying. But you just make sure that you take advantage of the support that each of these technologies is going to give you. That's where a lot of the help is going to come from. And many of the technologies we're going to talk about in the tech session have great support, have either good to excellent support. You want to take advantage of that. And of course, a VA can also help in that regard. So if you have a VA helping you through this process, they can take all that off your plate, and they either know the answers or they could do the legwork of contacting support for you and getting it fixed. Step number 9, upload your promotional emails and your delivery emails. So if you've decided to go with a drip content approach for your info product, you want to set up all your delivery emails. And frankly, you know, if that just seems a little bit overwhelming, or if your system doesn't really allow you to do that or do it very easily to kind of schedule emails to deliver content on certain dates, you can just do that manually on the dates that they're supposed to go out. So don't sweat that. I don't want you to obsess over using every feature and every automation aspect of this technology. At first, a lot of this is going to be manual. You know, it's not about getting it perfect the first time. It's really about just getting it deployed. So if it's drip content, just it's okay to do this manually. If it's not, you just want to make sure that you have your delivery email, which basically gives someone their login information. You want to have all that in place. In some cases, you may not have login information. In some cases, your shopping cart will automatically send a customer a link to a page where they can just download the product. I've done that. That's in fact the way I started my first ebook. My first couple of products were that way. Just here, thank you for your purchase. Here's a link where you can download the PDF book. And that's it. It wasn't password protected or anything. Eventually, the next step for me was, here's the page. And there was no username and password. It was a WordPress page with a password on it. So it was a password protected page, which gives you a little bit more protection, but it's still not foolproof. You know, somebody can spread the word about that. Somebody can hack into that. But I wouldn't worry too much about that. The next step is to get a membership site technology. And again, a lot of the tech we're going to be talking about has that built in, but that's what it's called, membership site. It's a little bit confusing, but just know this. Membership is all about when you're selling products, your system will automatically send your customer a username and password that's unique to them. And they need that to access the product. So it's creating kind of a secure website that's password protected, and only those who have login information can access your info product or course or what have you. So just know that you don't have to start there. If you're using a turnkey solution, in most cases you will automatically get that technology. But if you're not using a turnkey solution, man, just sending somebody a link to your product in that delivery email, that's really just good enough. One other thing with step 9 is if you're using or deploying a lead magnet, you also want to make sure that you have that lead magnet delivery email. We talked about that a little earlier, but since we're talking about delivery emails here, that's just kind of a make sure point that you have that set up and in place. And then finally, step number 10, you want to now, once all this is in place, it's time to launch. You want to hit that launch button. Now, I alluded to this a little earlier. You want to make sure that your launch has a start and an end date, at least initially. Deadlines create scarcity, and scarcity is a very powerful element. So it's if you're going to have like a coaching component to this, it's a no-brainer to have a deadline because you have to close it because there's a live element to it. But even if it's not, even if it's completely digital, at least in your first launch, I recommend having a deadline. And then one way you could do this in a way that doesn't come across as kind of scammy or weird is to position it as a beta or as a trial group. And that gives you legitimacy because you can say, look, I'm just doing this beta. I'm putting it out there just to a small group of people who want to go through this. You're promoting it at a heavily discounted price because it's a beta. It's the trial. You don't want to emphasize the beta component too much if you think it might devalue the product. But you want to have an element of that there, right? The fact that, hey, this is just a first group. It's a test group. Because it's a test group, it's a very heavily discounted price. You know, you can get in for X amount. But there's a window there. And by having that, you give the justification for that enrollment window. So that's a great way to create that window that gives you the scarcity element. And just to kind of give you an idea, I mean, scarcity is a really weird thing. Only use it if you can legitimately use it in a high integrity way. But about 35%, sometimes 50% of our sales for a product come in on the last day of enrollment. It's just crazy and nerve-wracking at the same time. So it can really, all in all, drive more sales when you have an enrollment window than it does, believe it or not, when it's evergreen, meaning when it's always available. But go ahead and keep that window, enrollment window, not just because it will drive more sales, but also because it will give you an opportunity to get the people in there, work with them, get their feedback. And then on next time you launch it, if you want, you could do evergreen. That's not a problem. Let's talk a little bit about the approach or the philosophy behind this initial launch. Here's what you're trying to do. Ideally, you want to get the low-hanging fruit at this point. I mean, that's kind of a natural thing. It's going to happen. It's going to happen very organically. You know, when I talked about building your initial list, remember we talked about bringing in people who already know, like, and trust you, right? And then asking them to spread the word. And that second degree of connections that hopefully will enter your list, but they've been referred. So this is a really good group, and that's what you want for this initial launch. You don't want to go completely cold. You can certainly build a business that way, but it's going to take a lot longer and you could get discouraged. So as best as you can, try to get low-hanging fruit into your list who can help support this initial launch. So these are going to be the people who already have the pain, who already, you know, their timing is right. They already trust you. All those components we talked about are there, or at least most of them are there. And most of these first buyers will be in that group. These are going to be people who know you, even if you've already started building your list, like we talked about in one of the earlier steps. I mean, some of them might even be people that you talk to through the validation process. So these are people who've bought into this. They know what you're doing. They're excited. You've had conversations. You've had email correspondence. This is, again, your low-hanging fruit. And you might even decide to comp some of these people, comp all of them. It depends how you want to approach it. We've talked about that before. But so if you're going to do a full beta and you're working with a very low level of confidence, it's totally okay to go ahead and comp a small group at first in exchange for their feedback and their commitment that they're going to go through it and give you that feedback. And if they really like it, also give you a brief testimonial. So that's always a fair trade, and that's certainly a way to launch this that you should consider. Now, from here on out, you're going to need to depend more on building a list of strangers and then building trust, building a relationship with them over time by giving them value in the way of high impact, high value, relevant, free content. And that's where your list building effort will come in. That's why you want to start that list building process early, So you have some good prospects in the queue for the next launch or two, or when you take this product evergreen, then the lead magnet will get them to cross that first chasm, right? But then you're going to want to nurture them with free content until that you're going to publish on a regular basis until they're ready, until the timing and the trusts are there. So over time, and after your first or second launch, you may want to create that first tripwire related to your info product, something we talked about in the last session, and that's going to help you generate more customers. But again, I don't want you to worry about that right off the bat, because that essentially is a second product, and I don't want you to have to create two products before you launch. So start with one. It's okay, because even if you price it at $100, right, so you have no tripwire, you're asking people to go from zero to 100, because technically most of the people on your initial list will be people where there's a high trust factor, the crossing that chasm will be a lot easier. But once you've exhausted that list, then that's when you need to have nurtured that second group that's coming behind them, so that you have a group of people where all those factors are intersecting. So again, don't worry too much about the tripwire. We're going to actually cover a little bit more on the tripwire in the next lesson, and we're going to talk more about where to go from here with your subsequent launches. One last thing before I sign off, and I really want to address the what I call the emotional roller coaster of launching. This is going to be your first launch, and you need to set the right expectations. As I've said many times before, this is a long game. You're not doing this. There's nothing about this. This get rich quick. You're not doing this to make $1 million. I mean, if you end up making that kind of money at some point, great. But you should not expect that anytime soon. I haven't gotten to that level myself, even after doing this for 8 years. That's fine. I don't necessarily want to get to that level, although it is kind of a goal of mine, but it's not what the only thing that drives me, believe me. It could take months or even one or more years before you're actually profitable. Let me put it to you that way, okay? What do I mean by profitable? I mean that your revenue actually exceeds your the time you've put into this plus your technology investments. Okay, that's an easy way to think about it. So you're going to put a lot of time into creating this, into promoting it. You need to factor in, okay, well, what is that time worth? What's the opportunity cost? Let's say I could have earned $150 an hour with doing client work on that. So you need to kind of add that. If you add that up and then factor in the hard cost of the technology that you're going to need to run your business, it's easily going to be a year or longer before you're really in the black. So just I want you to set that expectation, because I think it's going to serve you well. If you're trying to make, you know, some, and by the way, some of you could actually beat that. Some of you could get there in 6 months. It happens. It happens all the time. But I think you'd be better off if you just remind yourself, look, I'm just going to focus on doing my best work here, on putting the best product out there, and then just doing this right. If you do that, I think you're going to end up in a better place than if you're trying to rush through getting in the black, you know, as quickly as possible. I think it's a good thing to strive for, but it shouldn't be the first thing. So my advice would be from an income standpoint for this info products business of yours, which is going to be a side gig for most of you, try not to depend on the income you generate from this side gig for at least the first year. And even then, even once you're in the black, my suggestion would be to plan on living with 80% or less of what you're bringing in after you cover your costs for technology and so forth. That way you're always ahead. So in other words, once you're in the black, don't treat that as, okay, great, I'm making, you know, $3,000 a month from this. I'm factoring that into my personal budget. No, I would, if you're making $3,000, I would try to live with two out of that. That way you always have that buffer. In fact, I would take the other $1,000 and I would save it. And that way you do have that buffer. That's always a safe bet. And that's something that One of the mistakes I made because of the way that I kind of switched into this business drastically in 2012, I was depending on my info products income very, very quickly because I had made the decision to just kind of flip my business and do 20% freelancing and 80% info products. And that's a tough place to be because it's a lot of pressure. Finally, I'll just say this. You're going to make mistakes, you know, for years. You're going to make mistakes. So I'm not here to try to discourage you. I just want you to be aware of that and to accept the fact that you're going to make mistakes. I mean, I've shared some of mine already. You know, my second product was a huge flop. It was actually a physical info product of CDs. And I had, this one was painful because it was 2008. It wasn't a good year. If you remember what happened in 2008 with the economy, it wasn't a good year to take risks. And I put a lot of time and money and effort into the second product. And because it was a physical product, the fulfillment house that created the product and it would store the product for me had a minimum, and I want to say it was 20 units. So I had to pre-buy 20 units that they went ahead and made. And let me just give you the results. I sold a whopping 2 products. In fact, I think I still have about 15 of them on the shelf somewhere in Indiana. They have to have about 3 inches of dust on them because they're never going to sell. So, you know, I made that mistake because I didn't survey. I didn't do validation. I got excited from the success of my first product where it was a big chunk of it was luck. And I just thought, well, you know, I'm gonna have that kind of success with everything. No, you have to survey, you have to validate, you have to make sure your audience actually wants that. And what it was a product that I thought my audience needed, and I feel strongly about that, but they didn't want it. So just keep reminding yourself, you need to create products that your audience actually wants, not necessarily the things they need, because many times, I mean, if you can find the combination of both, need and want, awesome. But many times, it's going to be very, very difficult to find that. I didn't start doing things that, to me, I just can't believe I went so long without doing it. I didn't start segmenting my list until about 18 months ago. And that's not something you need to worry about right now. But basically, I was sending the same messages to everybody for a long time. Even people who had bought my product, they were still getting promotions about that product and other more advanced segmenting that now, to me, are just kind of common sense. I didn't do that for a long, long time. I didn't start adding upsells and downsells until about 2 years ago. Again, that's something you don't need to worry about. But considering how long I've been doing this, I've made a lot of these mistakes. One, I don't know if I'd call it a mistake, but this is something that I wish I would have been a little bit more cautious about. I spent more than $250,000 in a combination of cash and opportunity costs, and as far as lost income, that I didn't take projects, I didn't take clients to build this business from 2008 to 2012. That is a big, big number. Now, a lot of it was an opportunity cost. Most of that wasn't actual cash, but the cash was definitely in the tens of thousands. When The Wealthy Freelancer, the book that I co-wrote, went out, Pete, Steve, and I were trying to build a business around it. I poured my heart and soul into that. That was, you know, part the genesis of what I have today, but I put a lot of time, effort, and money into that, and I turned down a lot of client work because I wanted to build it, but, you know, I drained my savings. And, you know, looking back, I wish I would have been a little bit more cautious. I mean, I know that I am where I am today because I took those risks, but I wish I would have just, you know, given myself a little bit more time and maybe not been as optimistic because, you know, I have a family and I can't necessarily take those risks all the time. So just be cautious there. And then the other thing I would say is, well, two more things. First, try not to compare yourself to others. I will tell you, this is a big flaw of mine. I think it's because of my personality. It might not be something that you're going to struggle with, but when I see other people who sell info products out there who are doing much better than I am, and I happen to know, maybe because I bought one of them, one of their products, or because I know what their stuff is like. When I know that their stuff is not necessarily better than mine, in some cases, nowhere near as good as mine, that hurts. I it's hard for me to let go of that. And I, you know, I feel a strong sense of resentment and in some cases envy, and that's not good. You know, so this is something that I struggle with and I'm trying to be a lot better about. But I'm telling you, if you get sucked into that, if you find other players in your niche, in your target market that are doing something similar and they seem to be killing it, you know, try not to compare yourself to them. You know, you never know what's really happening behind the scenes. In some cases, they may not really be killing it. In some cases, maybe they are doing extremely well. But maybe, you know, so many other aspects of their life are suffering because of it. So something to keep in mind. And then finally, I would say, look, as you go through this process, remind yourself constantly of why you're doing this. Again, this is a long game. You're going to make mistakes. It's going to be painful. It's going to be frustrating. You need to have a really solid why, a really good reason of why you're doing this. Otherwise, when the going gets tough, you're going to quit. You know, hang your hat and say, forget it. It's not worth it. So it needs to be more than money. Money, I get it. It's a big driver for many of us. You know, we need to make a living, but make sure there's something more than that. And I can't tell you what that's going to be for you. That's going to come from you. And it's got to come from you because that's what's going to have to drive you when you're out there alone in the dark, in the cold. So always remind yourself why you're doing this business. All right. So that's it for today. Hopefully this has been helpful. I'm going to give you a summary, a checklist with these steps. So when you get to this point, you have something handy that you can use as a guide, and I hope you have a great rest of the day. Take care.